This is PWTorch.com editor Wade Keller, along with Torch columnist Bruce Mitchell and Pat McNeil. This is the post-TNA No Surrender pay-per-view audio roundtable. Bruce, we'll start with you and work our way through the show chronologically, beginning with Sting's promo at the beginning. What's your take on the approach that they're taking with Sting, calling out Samoa Joe and AJ Styles specifically, playing a babyface role, and the crowd in Canada chanting, you're a legend, Adam, as he talks about wanting to teach AJ and Joe about respect.
I almost had tears in my eyes watching this because it brought me back 20 years to when Sting had his first big push ever, and I was actually in the Dorton Arena when this happened. They gave Ric Flair the Man of the Year award. Sting came out. He was about to give his big promo, and they forgot what he was going to say. And he said,
no, wait, he didn't forget what he was going to say.
And he goes, I'm lost for words. And he came out tonight, and I swear to God, I don't know for sure. I can't read the guy's mind or anything. He started wandering around the ring like he was trying to buy time to figure out what the hell he was going to say.
I thought, you know, in fairness to him, and Pat, you can jump in with your opinion here, I thought he was milking the chant of you're a legend. But I wouldn't rule out your thought, Bruce. How about you, Pat? What do you think?
If I didn't know better, I'd be asking whether the guy had ever given a live promo before.
Yeah. See, and that's weird. I have such a low opinion of him. I thought he did a better job than usual for himself on this. But,
every week, you know. Every week we get to watch the creme de la creme of the sports entertainment world go out there and give, you know, good promos, and just sort of ruins it.
Yeah. He is Sting, and his mind wanders.
Well, the other thing I thought that maybe he was embarrassed, I mean, he does seem really uncomfortable playing this role. And he came out and, you know, he came out and wooed and said, well, it's great to be back in Canada.
Oh, I know.
And then
Bruce. And then he says, it's the Sting-ish in the shiznit in Canada-nish, or whatever that stupid BG.
Sting is in the his out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
my God.
Yes, and that's something you shouldn't do if you're Bruce Mitchell's age. I'm sorry.
No, you shouldn't. You shouldn't do it in 2008. Honestly.
Actually, you also shouldn't do it if you're Pat McNeil's age, or, you know.
But you shouldn't do it, if you're 20 and it's 2008, you shouldn't do it. That's okay. Like 2000.
Is it really 2000? Bruce, is it 2008?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm right there currency. I'm hit with what's real right now or whatever the hell you say.
Oh, Bruce, by the way, I wanted to congratulate your football team, the Carolina Panthers, on that great come-from-behind win earlier today.
Yeah, that was great. I was driving back from Durham. It was great to listen to on the radio as they kept going, all right, penalty, six man on the line, penalty, illegal formation, penalty. They had like 16 penalties in the first half, but between the two teams. But, no, 2-0, that's pretty good because usually they're choking dogs in their home opener, and they weren't today, so that was...
I don't know what the term choking dogs means, and I'm slightly offended by it, but whatever it means probably applies to the Vikings, so okay. I will get that.
Well, yeah. Well, you know who they play next week. You know who the Panthers play next week.
That's right.
The Redskins
play the Vikings.
Oh, that'll be fun.
And they come up to play the Vikings. I believe that's in Minnesota.
Oh, is it? Oh,
yes, it
well, Bruce, why aren't you coming into town for that?
Well, because you gave up your tickets or something. I don't know. You don't have any tickets?
I'm sure after an 0-2 start they'll be available. But let's get back to the show because
we
don't want to get too saturated.
No.
All right, well, let's just move on for this thing unless anybody wants to interrupt with more.
Here's the other part you do have to bring up. And I also thought maybe he was just embarrassed with what he was about to say because, lo and behold, he tried to recreate, you know, Bret Hart did like the best promos of his career when he did the U.S., when he did the Canada is right and USA is wrong stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So then he brought up, respect, just like Bret Hart 10 years ago, right here in Canada, and he just looked embarrassed, and I was embarrassed for him, and the crowd kind of cheered at the mention of Bret Hart, but, I mean, it was a theme throughout this show. The booking was definitely a lot of Vince Russo cliches, and to bring back Survivor Series again, just because they were in Canada, was right up there with it. But yeah, no, I really did. I thought he forgot what he was supposed to say.
And for the record, it's now 11 years ago and counting, by the way.
Yes.
No, it's 10 years and counting. It'll be 11 in November.
The first match was
Pat. You were the one who complained about the WrestleMania 25 anniversary, and now you're getting the date wrong.
Okay, it's 10 years and it's 10 years and 10 months.
Yes.
How's that?
All right, good. Match number one: Super Eric Sharkboy and Curry Man against Jimmy Rave, Lance Rock, and Christy Hemme. Pat, take it away.
Well, you know, this was better than I thought it would be, which of course isn't saying much, since, you know, the whole goal. Normally, I hate the mixed tag matches when they have men fighting women, but the whole goal of the babyface male team was not to beat up Christy Hemme. In fact, it was to hit on Christy Hemme, which, you know, at least made it. I don't know why I found that less objectionable than beating up Christy Hemme, but I did. Of course, they beat up Christy Hemme anyway. At least Dark Boy did.
Well, as always, when a woman gets a kiss forced on her, she ends up liking it.
Well, that it depends.
In wrestling, that is the universal rule.
Well, you know, Sensational Sherry usually didn't like it when the baby face kissed her.
Yeah.
Of course, you have to go back
15
to 20 years for that. So never mind. I didn't think much of this match. I thought it was, you know, I thought it was pretty much a harmless. It's pretty much a harmless opener. It wasn't great.
It's what an opener should be for TNA. If given TNA's style of booking, I'd rather have this than a bunch of X Division wrestlers in a meaningless match doing way too many high spots and burning out the crowd. So at least in this case, there were characters, there was a storyline, it was some decent action, but it wasn't burning out the crowd.
And for me, the most entertaining part was seeing Christy Hemme try to keep a straight face and fail in certain occasions.
Yeah. Bruce?
Yeah, I thought this was kind of a fun opener if you could kind of look past, you know, Christy Hemme's unconscious at the end and what's-his-face is rubbing his hands all over her body, you know, which I could. I mean, it was just kind of – but I thought, like, the action was kind of fun. There were some funny little spots, and it was a decent opener.
Yeah.
Hurry Man, excuse me.
Yeah,
you know, decent, silly opener, so.
All right, Awesome Kong, ODB. My take on this, Bruce and Pat, is when the strength to size ratio is such as it is, and then you add in sweat and fatigue and greenness, there's about two-thirds of the moves that they tried in this match that they shouldn't have tried to do, including, most prominently, a powerbomb off the ropes by ODB, attempting to powerbomb Awesome Kong through a table. They land on the table, but they land too far. They slide off the table. The table tips over. Awesome Kong ends up basically cell phoned. She's flipped into cut in half with her neck bent over. ODB falls on top of her and then doesn't roll off the table, but just lays there stunned, putting more pressure on Kong. I mean, I thought Kong had a broken neck at that point, or certainly thought there was a possibility of it. And then ODB eventually gets up, still seems kind of disoriented, and grabs at her wrist that got hurt. Kong, thankfully, was okay. But then they managed to almost kill each other, I think, once or twice more in this match. But otherwise, it was good. I mean, they put in, and I don't mean that facetiously, they put in an honest effort, and they worked hard, but there's just a level of fright that I have watching almost everything they do. Bruce, your thoughts?
I agree with you about an honest effort. I didn't feel slighted about that, but I thought this was a bad match. And I thought, and a lot of what you were saying, and one of the things about this pay-per-view was there were guys doing dangerous spots in the middle of matches for no reason, and they were doing it too. But I just thought they didn't seem to be on the same page a lot of the time.
They're both green. I mean, they really are. I mean, they have some experience.
No, I mean, there's reasons for it, but still, it's made for a bad. It made for a bad match.
Oh, totally.
And
the
spot in the middle of the ring with I'm not even sure if you tried to powerbomb Awesome Kong off the top rope and not break the table, you could really accomplish it. But somehow they managed to do that. But it looked awful, and it just wasn't a good match.
Pat, do you agree this is kind of tough to rate? Because
there's
pros and cons. I mean, I wouldn't go above 2 stars for sure because of the negatives, but I'm hard-pressed to go under a star just because there was enough good, and it felt like a real fight at times. But.
I agree with sort of what both of you said. The only I'm trying to come up, you know, I'm pretty much an optimist, and I try to come up with the best case scenario. The only best case I can come up with is this is a pretty good indication of what a hardcore match would look like in real life, I mean, it was sort of a don't try this at home type of a match.
Yeah. Now I would say there was something that happened in the pay per view feed for Bruce and me later that would count as the most shocking moment of the show, and we'll get to that, but I actually think the most shocking moment of the show was when Don West made reference to ODB trying to pull off Saeed's mask, for lack of a better term, and said he was slightly bothered by it because that mask that she wears, it has to do with her religion. I was, like, blown away that Don West, of all people, would be appropriately PC in that situation and point out the absurdity of us supposedly cheering ODB for no reason trying to pull off Raisha Saeed's mask. And my jaw dropped. I'm like, I can't believe a wrestling announcer just respected a religion other than Christianity and pointed out the hypocrisy of cheering somebody doing that. So that was my shocking moment of the show.
Well, I will say this. I thought that he had an even better line later on in the show. We'll get to that.
Bruce, did you not hear Pat starting to talk?
I did, but no. I wanted to throw that in because if he started talking about something else, then I wouldn't be able to say that. So I had to get that in, and then we can go to Pat. But
all right, well, as long as that's the rule.
You interrupted me doing that, so now it's stretched out a lot longer than it should have been and made for a bad segue. So if you just let me do what I was going to do, then we got right to him.
But there's oftentimes I interrupt you for the exact same reason, and you...
I think you're being disrespectful to Pat now.
Pat, go ahead.
What was the question? I'm kidding. All right. With the mask, I mean, yeah, I agree with that to a point, Wade, that, you know, in order to buy that Don West is worried about, you know, Raisha Saeed's religion, you have to take into account the ridiculousness of Raisha Saeed wearing something that I guess is supposed to be a Muslim headdress and scarf and wearing it over really thick pancaked makeup, which I'm pretty sure is not part of how Muslim women are supposed to dress.
I'm
not really sure they're supposed to be wrestling in that garb either, or wrestling at all.
Well, there is that,
what part of the it starts to disintegrate pretty fast. This kind of thing.
I would say the broad brushstroke is that's a religious mask, a religious head garb, and to cheer a baby face for unprovokingly trying to rip it off of her head, to me seems anti. It seems disrespectful and unprovoked and not something that you would encourage them
the other thing about it has nothing to do with the religion is when you do something like set up that they want to take the mask off, then there needs to be somebody underneath the mask that you've heard of or seen that you would go, wow, it's so-and-so.
Totally. Bruce, it's the thing you harp on. I mean, it's like there's people who do the final chapter of a booking scheme. And they have no idea what the basis is of the original booking scheme. Yeah, you know, I mean, people have kind of come debunked it a little bit. It's like having a cage match on Raw this week with Punk and Jericho when there's really not a backstory between those two that would justify rushing right into a cage match.
Well, the backstory is they're worried about falling ratings. That's the backstory. but that's not the backstory.
That's the answer I always get, and it's like that's not a backstory. That's a reason. That's a promotional reason.
I know, but I think Pat was, unlike some other
people,
And then, of course, with Raisha Saeed, you have to question why somebody who I guess is supposed to be a Muslim woman with an Arabic name is speaking in the exact same accent used by Natasha Fatale in the Bullwinkle cartoons.
I've never heard anyone.
You haven't watched Bullwinkle, but
I grew up on Bullwinkle.
Big trouble for Muslim squirrel.
All right, there's a track. Let's look for it and get back on it.
Next match.
Next match is Matt Morgan and Abyss versus Team 3D. Matt Morgan, I'm sorry. They can talk all they want about him being a blueprint, if you were to design a wrestler from scratch, blah, blah, blah. I'm totally getting why WWE gave up on him. I mean, he's just not in the right place at the right time. He just, like, at the very end, when Abyss got hit with a chair by I think it was Brother Ray, and he, like, looks over at Brother Ray, realizes he's not supposed to notice Brother Ray's interfering, so he quickly looks away and just stands there and waits for Brother Ray to hit him from behind or whatever it was, and then turn him. I mean, it was just like he's just off on this stuff. Same thing where Devon was holding a chair and he was going to hit Abyss with it, and Devon had to stand there for, like, a minute waiting for Morgan to get to his spot to grab the chair away from him. He's just not where he needs to be or not looking at the right place at the right time, and he celebrates after every single move. It drives me nuts, so I'm not a fan of his right now. But in this match, Morgan and Abyss win and want to take a title shot. Pat, your thoughts?
If I were designing a wrestler from scratch, I would like to think he'd be good at what he does. I hated this match. This match went 11 minutes. It felt like it lasted a month. And it was just, you know.
It was sloppy and clunky.
Yeah, and it did the impossible. It made me feel sorry for Bubba Ray Dudley and Devon because they're in there with, you know. And a little sorry for Abyss because, you know, I mean, at least Abyss has probably worked some tag matches before in his life. I mean, this was just, this was just bad. And then you had the, and on top of that, you had the bad finish, and you know, in which you teased a feud between Matt Morgan versus Abyss, which surely is what the world has been waiting for.
Now wait a second. There's no way they can feud, because it's obvious that when Morgan gets to the back, he'll simply review the footage on the monitor and realize he wasn't there with the chair by Abyss. I mean, it would make no sense for Abyss to, or for Morgan to still be mad within 10, you know, within 5 minutes.
Oh, of course not.
Yeah. See, that's going to be ludicrous. It's like Val. You know, they kind of try to cover their ass with Val, where she's in the hospital, and she said, you know, I don't like to watch TV right now, or something, whatever her excuse was for not seeing that duck turned on her. But anyway. Bruce, your thoughts on this one?
I agree with everything you said about Matt Morgan, number one.
Yeah, okay.
Number two, I agree with Pat. This was a bad, bad match. And it is... It's a classic Vince Russo hole in the storyline it's classic Vince Russo in the first place to put together guys for one show and then have the breakup in the first match. And it's also Russo cliche, you know.
I mean, literally, they were together for 72 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, literally, they taped more than 72 hours ago, but I know what
you're
saying.
Okay, well, yes.
In wrestling reality, yeah. Did I just say?
But,
never mind.
Yes, Mr. Wayne.
Yeah,
so,
you got it.
No, they, and then it's also, as you were talking about, that any reasonable person would just say, what do you mean? If you don't believe me, go back and watch it on the videotape.
Yep.
And
yep.
So that's classic.
Yeah.
That's
I would have loved it if the camera caught Abyss actually saying that.
Yeah.
Hey, Matt, cool down. We'll go look at the videotape.
I can prove it. Yeah.
That would be... That would
bad
be
match, bad booking, bad.
Yeah, I thought there were some okay spots in the match, but yeah, mostly clunky in spots. All right, Petey Williams, Consequences Creed, Sheikh Abdul-Bashir. Just little comment here. I paid attention for the first time, I admit, to Bashir's intro music. Did you, Bruce?
Yes, I did.
I'm appalled.
Yeah, I'm appalled too, and yeah.
I'm
serious too.
Yeah, no, that is not something you do. I mean, it's such a lapse in common sense. It's one to me. It's one of the lowest promoting tactics I've ever seen to exploit that. I mean, it was conscious. Somebody consciously said, "Let's get this guy heel heat," whose character is otherwise relatively sophisticated and well drawn, and they dumb it down into the worst thing you can imagine, which is the sound. For people who don't know what we're talking about, it's the sound of jetliners. That a 747 engine, and then a big bang, and I think glass shattering. It's like crashing into a building. It's just, it's the most tasteless thing. Coming 3 days after the anniversary, horrible, but still horrible on any day. And I think that to me is enough to get a Spike TV's attention and In-Demand's attention.
Well, good luck with that. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, that would, well, see, you'd have to sit them down and make them watch TNA, which.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but if I'm Spike TV, I don't want to be associated with that.
Because
that's if the mainstream press gets a hold of that or sponsors realize that's going on. I mean, it's reprehensible. All right, match itself. Bruce, why don't you talk about the match itself? What'd you think?
You know, I complain a lot about Vince Russo's booking, but I just to see the finish of this match, the wholly original finish of this match, where the sneaky heel sneaks into the ring and steals the pin from the deserving babyface. To win the title. I mean, the emotion went through my body when I saw that. Even though I've seen, you know, thousands and thousands of wrestling matches, to see that finish just wasn't fair. It wasn't fair for Bashir to do that to, you know, Petey Williams, Scott Steiner's bottom. And it just wasn't fair. I mean, and to be that creative and to come up with that from somewhere, you know, most. I always accuse Vince Russo of repeating himself and of finishes. But this one, where did he get the idea for this? How did TNA possibly come up with this finish?
I don't know.
That's what I have to say about it.
My brain feels scrambled trying to think about it.
In other words, these lazy mofos took the finish of the pay-per-view, the main event pay-per-view from the week before when Chris Jericho won the title by sliding in after Batista had done all the work to pin, I forget who it was.
I don't think that's the first time.
At the end of the No Mercy pay-per-view, whatever pay-per-view it was.
I don't think that's the first time it was ever done last Sunday, but Yeah, the timing.
It's pretty lazy. It's pretty sorry.
All right, but this is a pretty. There's some pretty good action in this match, and I think Petey and Creed and Bashir did a nice job as athletes.
Yeah, the wrestling was okay. Yeah.
They don't have time to come up with creative finishes. They've got stuff to do.
Oh, yeah. They had a lot of creative stuff on this show. A lot of Russo creativity on this show.
Yeah. The crowd obviously was into Petey, but I think they wanted to hate Creed, and they didn't. I mean, they didn't really hate on him too much, but they definitely were for Petey, the Canadian hero. But all right, Taylor Wilde, Angelina Love, with Cute Kip and Velvet Sky ringside for Angelina Love. Taylor Wilde announced before the match, she's got her equalizer, enforcer, her new best friend in the world, Rhino, and fans continue to be conditioned to believe that no match will end, or match is very unlikely to end until somebody interferes or there's some foreign object or a ref goes down. Same thing happened here. Kip tries to interfere. Rhino gores him, and then that leads to Taylor Wilde getting the win after Sky's interference backfired too. It was short, but it was good. The action itself was all right, but it's not, you know, it's 6 minutes of a TNA Knockouts title match. It's not the type of match that is going to keep any kind of momentum or build momentum for the division. Pat, your thoughts?
Well, you know, if the TNA Knockout title, which, you know, and the TNA Knockouts are the highest rated segments on TNA usually, if that can be used to set up a feud between Rhino and Kip James, I'm all for it.
Yeah. What did you think of the match?
It wasn't bad, but it was something that, you know, I could have seen on Impact, except for the fact that on Impact they would have trimmed it down to 4 minutes.
Yeah, or it would have been 8 minutes, but with commercial break in the middle. Bruce, your thoughts?
I thought the match was okay. I'm just amazed at they've got a decent act going in the Beautiful People, so they throw in a guy who has just messed up every. I mean, who's just been an anvil on everything, dragging down everything he's associated with Kip James, and you know, I don't know. Does he have? He must have some sort of guaranteed on TV lifetime contract with these people. That's just awful.
There'll be a tell-all book, and there'll be some explanation, and then we'll nod and we'll go, okay.
It's quite a great Canadian.
So he must have saved somebody's children from, you know, getting run over by a train or something.
Well, that's what I mean. You know, like, yeah, he'll have given the Heimlich maneuver to Dixie Carter at a restaurant, you know.
And you know what? I am fine with them paying him for the rest of his life a fortune if they want to, but why do I have to see him on TV? And throwing in Rhino too, who doesn't really fit with this girl. So it's just, the match is okay.
Well, to quote a great Canadian, you know, Kip has Billy Gunned everything he's ever been involved with in the wrestling business.
Yes. All right, then Black Machismo, Sanjay Dutt, ring on a pole match, a battle to wed SoCal Val. I thought they took the ladder match concept. They watched all the other ladder matches that they could get their hands on and then tried to do a bunch of spots that had never been done before. I mean, I thought they actually innovated a match that has been just ridden into the ground, and I thought they did a really nice job executing a lot of complex spots, in most cases, really believably. I mean, I give these two guys, booking aside, I thought they did a really nice job with this format of a match. Bruce, your thoughts?
You know, they had innovative spots like a camel clutch on top of two ladders, but I would argue whether they're very realistic. This, to me, was one of those matches like you see sometimes on an indie show when they do ladder matches, which is they forget about winning the match, and it's all about doing the spots. And that, you know, there were like too many times to me where it's just like climb up the ladder and grab the ring, but I can't believe I'm saying that in the first place. This had, you know, you have to throw the booking into it, you have to throw the context into it.
You're right, Bruce. To fairly evaluate the product, you got to consider everything. But I just want to give the credit to the two wrestlers for taking a stale concept and doing what they could, booking aside. Where I want to give them credit for that. Big picture, you got to consider the booking, though. You're right, because it does affect even the athleticism of the match.
Well, here's what I was going to say, and it does kind of relate to what you're talking about. They did come up with different spots and look at stuff and study it, and they did some very athletic things, and they did some dangerous things and some destructive things, not just dangerous things. When you're taking a backflip on full onto a ladder and that kind of thing, I mean, that's destructive to your body, and they're doing this in the midst of the lowest comedy match you could, you know, the lowest kind of comedy you could have.
Yeah.
They're making that kind of sacrifice, which isn't going to move them anywhere, or there's no reward for all that risk to me, except for, you know, maybe they'll get a This Is Awesome chant, which they did get a This Is Awesome chant. But this was just this amalgamation, and I wrote this for the little review, but, I mean, it's this amalgamation of everything that's wrong with Russo. Wrestlers doing dangerous things, really silly, dumb, where you just can't, I mean, it's just too many things you have to ignore, booking with a bitch you can't trust at the end. So, I mean, and a swerve that any idiot could see coming, you know, particularly if you watched him, you know, it was just like it was a parody of everything that Vince Russo does, except he did it, and I'm sure he meant it seriously.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, you lead to a good point, which is it's been chronicled for about a decade, you know, that when Vince Russo comes up with stuff, he occasionally comes up with spots where he has to be told, no, that's too dangerous, the wrestler's not going to do it. Because, you know, he's never been in the ring. Well, and when he's been in the ring, he's never acted. Yeah, exactly. He doesn't know, yeah.
Well, there's no empathy for people.
Right.
I don't know, yeah.
Well, there's that, too. I mean, I think, you know, I admire the athleticism of both wrestlers. I think, you know, maybe this could have been a hell of a deal if it was, like, the only match on the show ending in outside interference and having a shocking swerve in it, you know, but that obviously wasn't the case. And the other thing that came to mind was, okay, this is over. Sanjay, SoCal Val has turned on Jay. Sanjay Dutt has the ring. They're going off together. Sanjay Dutt has won the ladder match and has won the girl. How is Jay Lethal supposed to get revenge? Is he supposed to challenge Sanjay Dutt to a regular match?
No, he's supposed to put... He's supposed to put his wife up in a match, and then he gets her back, so they both have sex with her. Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's gone so ridiculous. It's such a ridiculous bad feud, and it's a waste of the three people, and it's just
it is absurd. It is the candidate for worst feud of the year, without a doubt. And when Val helped Lethal right before turning on him, it's the epitome of just low IQ booking. I mean, there's just no reason that I can think of, and correct me if I'm wrong, for Val to help Lethal shortly before giving him a low blow, unless her goal was to swerve the fans at the risk of ending up having to marry a guy she obviously had determined she didn't love.
For anybody who says that, oh, Vince Russo didn't book it, Jeff Jarrett's a boss, fine. You have it your way. Jeff Jarrett's a lousy book. I don't care.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's definitely something that Russo did, and there's that theme in TNA of women and marriage being horrible. And, you know, there's that theme of one more step, and it's, you know, and really the story of this feud so far has been, when were Jay Lethal and Sanjay Dutt happy? When SoCal Val wasn't in the picture, and they were best buds together. I mean, I'm not even, I mean, I know it's funny, but I'm not even kidding. That's the moral of this story.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, what, you know.
Or it's the unconscious inspiration. I mean.
It's somebody needs to go to a therapist. And it's like, you know.
Women ruin everything. That's the
women ruin everything. And I'm sorry, if there's somebody in the TNA creative, and I don't know for sure, but it's like somebody in TNA creative is stuck in a bad marriage, I'm sorry. But I don't want to see that on my wrestling show. And if there's somebody that actually believes that, if there's a booker that actually believes that wrestlers are better off with a tag team partner than some woman, then be honest about it. You know, just be honest about it and book it that way. But this stuff is just, you know, go away.
I just think.
Next match.
No, I was just going to say something about this match. And I'm giving myself 2 seconds to try to remember what.
No, wait, you are right that, like, they had innovative. They had new ladder spots. They were and they were hitting them, and they were athletic.
If this is your type of match, and you don't care about the finish and the booking, you just want to see a cool ladder match, and you would go, I want to see all really good ladder matches, and that's a big thing for me. I mean, this show is something to find. That match is something to find a way to see, whether it's ordering the pay per view, waiting for it, whatever. On DVD, but this is a ladder match that belongs among the better ladder matches. It's not the all time greatest ladder match, but it belongs on the list of good ones. And I think it's tough to still have a good one without brilliant booking to back it up. And I think they overcame the bad booking and had a really good match. I disagree, Bruce, a little bit on saying that they were trying to do big spots and not try to win, but maybe I'm just numb to the or I'm just so used to the concept of the match that I just see overly complex moves as the necessary evil to climb the ladder. But I saw them trying to.
And, you know, and on my side, my bias is I'm really, particularly since what happened to Chris Benoit, I watch these ladder matches, and particularly they don't have a purpose, even though they might have some, you know, cool ladder spots. I just don't think it's worth it. And that's, I'm really not.
They come back and they show a truth video. I'm just going to call him the truth. I don't know what the R-Truth crap.
The truth.
Yeah, he's he came out to his What's Up music, everybody said, on the Dark matches and stuff.
Yeah, I've seen him on the Shark match, too. But, Travis, that's, like, crazy, though. I mean, I don't know, maybe because he has the rights to that song, but it's just weird that that's his song in the in a whole nother federation, if
right.
you will, a whole nother
company. Yeah, it is weird, but it's a banging song. I mean,
it's a banging
rapping,
song.
Rapping, whatever, but if he did that beat, he would have got some, I mean, nice young bit of talent. So...
His
he came out.
Worked,
yeah, he came out. He did his, it was a little tamer, it seemed. It was the same move and the same terrible spin and the popping, I guess, whatever. Just not modern, like, urban dancing. It's like so dated, but whatever. Came out, big smile, smacked some hands with some fans. Then his opponent, Kenny Dykstra, got introduced. Dykstra had a mic in his hand. Kenny Dykstra told the truth he didn't like him. He said, you're nothing but a convict. And really got the people wanting to see the truth, you know.
Well, through that, pretty much.
Yeah. You know, something about people like you, and that set the truth off, of course. You know, gotta have those.
What do you mean, people? What do you mean, people like me?
Right. So, within the first couple seconds of the match, Truth did a. It's not really a victory roll, because victory rolls when you roll down somebody off their shoulders. It was like a wheelbarrow roll up into a pin, and the first like 10 seconds of the match, and Kenny kicked out and. He didn't have much offense. He had a little bit. Truth got off his flying forearm, and he does, like, the six spins afterwards. And
called the spinning elbow corkscrew.
Yeah, I guess. That sounds technically right. Wonder if they're going to give him any... can you imagine? I've been saying this for 2 years. My favorite indie star... freaking Human Tornado.
The
similar kind of, you know, they do spins and Human Tornado does the same axe kick. So, I mean, Human Tornado? Anyone with, whatever.
I don't think so.
He got hurt soon as when he was about to get a nice push in Ring of Honor. That was kind of corny. God damn it. If he'd have been on that show coming in September, here to the Armory, I'd have probably went to see him. Like, I went to see him. Like, I went to see Matt Sydal versus AJ Styles.
Yeah.
But, so, anyway, Truth finished him off with the X kick and a bunch of spins. It was okay. It wasn't, you know, but the crowd was into it. And this old guy at work.
It was a typical, typical Truth match. But,
yeah,
that's the reason right.
Yeah, there's an old guy at my job, Jeff. He, his wife, you know, I'm assuming she's probably like 60 or something, friggin' loves SmackDown. Only talks about SmackDown, so I'm assuming she doesn't watch Raw or they don't have cable. But she loves SmackDown, and he comes into the lamination department, and he's like, wow, some new guy debuted tonight? Somebody R-Truth? I was like, oh yeah, the truth. He's like, yeah, my wife's going nuts away over this guy. Like,
be nice. That's why.
Yeah. I can imagine she's just this little old, you know,
Yeah, and then she's seen him do that four or five spins in the midair. She was probably like, oh, she probably was just all crazy and shit. She ain't know what to do.
Little old lady from the sticks seeing this, purple looking bug.
It's purple.
It's a black bug.
Like motherfucker.
Yeah. So she really dug him. I'm sure she probably got a little fancy going there, probably. Oh, Mr. Blackman, don't hurt me.
He's one of my favorites, and I'm glad he's in the WWE.
Yeah, I'm definitely glad he's getting a shot. They didn't. I can't really say they didn't treat him well in TNA. I don't know, but he was not going to really.
I just hope he can handle the schedule. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Big difference.
So they go backstage to Michelle McCool photo shoot, which just happens to be like backstage somewhere. You know, right in the middle of the path and everything. Maurice interrupts the photo shoot and just talks some junk and says she wants the Divas title and it would look better on her and, just her whole conceited stuff.
She's so beautiful, though.
Yeah, she is freaking
hot. She's so beautiful.